Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Ira Harris and Peter Buchvar. Ira is an independent trader, successful hedge fund manager, global macro consultant trading foreign currencies, bonds, commodities, and equities for over 40 years. He was also CME director from 1997 to 2003. Peter is the chief investment officer for the Bleakley Group, and he has a newsletter product called The Book Report, spelled B-O-O-C-K-R-E-P-O-R-T, Book Report, all one word.com. It offers great macroeconomic insight and perspective with lots of updates on economic indicators. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Rich.
Great. I thought we'd do a view of your thoughts on 2018 in general, where markets are heading, what the trends are, if you see any geopolitical events happening, effects on the financial markets and the economy. And so maybe we begin with the current rally in equities. Do you think it's sustainable? What are the causes of this? Where do you see it going? Maybe start with Peter.
So we have is enthusiasm, of course, post U.S. tax reform, combined with optimism about global growth, generally speaking. That has overwhelmed any concerns with central banks and the tightening or less easing of monetary policy. So we went from don't fight the Fed, don't fight central banks to, you know, who cares about central banks because everything is fine in the economy. And there's this belief that we're making the transition from a reliance on monetary policy to the benefits of fiscal policy and synchronized growth. That is what the market currently believes. I think this year, that thesis will be tested as monetary policy usually dominates fiscal policy in terms of its impact on markets and the economy, because interest rates are such a strong lever. And in a highly indebted global economy, that becomes even more so the case.
And Ira, your thoughts?
Well, I have to stop and say that, you know, things Peter and I have done a lot with you, Richard, and so much of what we've discussed is really coming to fruition. In fact, today is, of course, an important day coming out of Davos. So, I hate this time of year because I'm just not a big fan of what goes on in Davos. I find it kind of despicable, to tell you the truth, that these people gather and there's so many political, powerful people there, from central bankers to treasury secretaries to finance ministers, discussing things, and it's an expensive ticket. I think it's $650,000, $700,000, and just what are you paying for? And that's always been my problem. And of course, here's the day today. We got a double blast. We got from Wilbur Ross, and from Mnuchin, Steve Mnuchin, U.S. Treasury Secretary, talking about, well, you know, if the dollar goes down, it's actually good for the U.S. trade. And then Wilbur Ross, I even found to be more incendiary, because he said, well, there's trade wars every day. And his, what was the exact phrase he used, that now we're sending soldiers to the ramparts? Well, that's a very, very incendiary phrase. And I was truly bothered by that. So everything we just talked about, everything Peter speaks to, this is going on. And you know, Richard, we talked, I think that the 10-year will close out the year at 3.4%. I heard Richard Fisher today, you know, pushing about 4 rate increases, maybe. But the more I hear, and what these people, what this administration is talking about, the more concerned I get as to where this is all going. But I think I understand why Mnuchin and why they chose Davos to make these statements, that'll be an issue for other people to think about. But it's very problematic, and it does raise some serious issues for the Fed. And it's going to put Jerome Powell in a very difficult position, especially if they keep now talking the dollar down. And, you know, Peter didn't speak of it, but I think we would probably agree the reason they're talking it down because, hey, if you're going to attack the Trump administration for for starting a trade war, well, the only other alternative is to talk the dollar down. So it now becomes, you know, open season as far as I'm concerned on the dollar. So, you know, why not? And let's call it the way it is. You know, Richard, today you're talking to two people. I know Peter has certainly been bearish the dollar from Peter from 108 on the euro.
Yeah, 105.
Yeah, 105. You know what? For sure. So I know this discussion's been going on for almost a year. And Richard, you know the many conversations I had. In fact, I know Peter and I totally found commonality when Mark Fields came out of the White House and talked about currency manipulation being the mother of all trade barriers. So it's almost like this administration now has adopted that and said, hey, okay, you want to go this route? We can play this game too. And that's where that leads us to today.
It's a very dangerous, slippery slope. Steve Mnuchin is obviously trying to help the manufacturing sector. But that's really 10% of the U.S. economy. We are a consumer-based economy. So damaging the purchasing power of a consumer-based economy is very dangerous. You have potential for rising import prices and certainly higher interest rates. And I think that will swamp any benefit to multinationals. You have commodity prices today, the CRB index, which is at the highest level in about 2.5 years. You have rising inflationary pressures, generally speaking, particularly in wages. And now you have the threat of rising interest rates that will only be exacerbated by a weaker dollar. I mean, we import more than we export, so big, highly inflationary. And foreigners own a lot more of our assets than we own of their assets. And we rely heavily, particularly in the U.S. Treasury market, on foreign buying of our bonds. You look at last year, so 1 year ago, a European buyer that wanted to pick up some yield bought a U.S. Treasury 10-year at 2.45%. Well, a year later, not only did they lose some principal since prices are lower, but they just lost 15% by owning the dollar. So this is a very dangerous game. The administration should be focused more on currency and dollar stability, not debasement. And this is a very negative, slippery slope.
Could other central banks, you know, outside of the Federal Reserve, take reaction to this? Could they, you know, could there be currency depreciation intentionally done by other central banks? Do you see that?
Well, we'll find out tomorrow when we hear from Draghi.
Yeah.
And Corona filled us in the other night. So, and again, you know, I've been. There's a lot of people short yen or long dollar yen here, you know, have been comfortable. And I've, you know, that's not a comfortable position that you should be in, because if there's somebody out with a target on their back, it's the Japanese. Because, I mean, the BOJ should have ended this policy. That doesn't mean you have to start tightening. But you certainly, and I know they're not buying as much as they say, as the market thinks that they are, because they don't have to. There's not that much to sell. So whatever you have to clean up to keep that yield curve at that position is certainly not nearly as much as it was, you know, a year ago. So we don't really know the full amount of buying, but whatever they want to do, then they step into the equity market anyway. But it's a very slippery slope. And I think we're going to hear from, I think Peter's exactly right, we're going to hear from tomorrow the ECB about the strength in the euro. Now, in some ways, the strength in the euro helps Draghi because it keeps the Germans at bay. And there, you know, and it's interesting that Wiedemann has now all of a sudden started talking more and more. So we'll see, but it does give Draghi some leverage to certainly go, well, you know, we can afford to be more patient. But it'll be interesting to see in his press conference how much he discusses the recent strength in the euro.
See, I actually think, and this is counterintuitive, that the strength in the euro actually gives Draghi some license to back away from his policy, because inflation pressures are building in Europe as well. And what these central bankers want, they have to be very careful with, because let's just say they achieve the inflation they want. Well, interest rates are not going to be where they are. If Draghi gets his 2% inflation, the German 10-year is not going to be 58 basis points. It's going to be multiples of that. And we saw in the market data today talking about price pressures intensifying. And I want to bring up also Japan, and I'm going to read from this press release today from Market on Japanese manufacturing. It said, strikingly, output price inflation accelerated to the fastest rate since October 2008 amid sharper rises to input costs. With a low rate of unemployment and sustained growth in official GDP data, inflation pressures should continue to mount. I mean, just imagine if they get the inflation that they're hoping for, what's going to happen to these bond markets? So by having actually a little rebound in their currency, they can maybe moderate the inflation pressures at the same time giving these central banks an out. Now, of course, central banks won't look at it that way. I'm sure Draghi is going to whine about the stronger dollar, stronger euro making it more difficult for him. But I think this is a window that it will give them an opportunity to back away from their policies, because I have to believe that they see the same inflation pressures that we do, particularly on the commodity side, with prices continuing to go up every day, seemingly.
So for this year, do you see a trend towards quantitative tightening by major central banks?
Well, the Fed is certainly initiating that. The ECB and the BOJ are just buying less, but buying less is still a form of tightening. You know, you blow air in a balloon. If you blow less air in that balloon, there's still air going in, but less air means a contraction of that balloon.
And Ira?
Well, yes, you know, Peter and I have a little bit of a different view on this, because I still think that Draghi is operating not just on a, you know, part of his mandate, not part of his mandate, his self-declared mandate is, of course, the preservation of the euro. And I still think that his end game is to put so much debt on those books, not that he doesn't have it already, he does, that he's going to push for the creation of a euro bond. And he hopefully thinks he has Macron in his camp. And I do think that he does. Merkel, I can't tell you what she's thinking right now. She's got some serious issues. Now, she was chirping about some stuff today about globalization and what they need to get done. And are they going to be with a unified banking authority? There's a lot of things on the platter in Europe. You know, it's just not a straight path. And I really think that if inflation takes off in Germany, Draghi is, and a lot of Brussels is happy, because it's a way for them to punish the Germans for being so intransigent, you know, towards Greece and Spain and Portugal on the fiscal, you know, pushing for fiscal austerity, even as unemployment was over 20%. So there's a lot of, you know what? You're going to have to endure this, because right now, you know what, the most ridiculously priced asset in the world, maybe outside the Swiss interest rate, is certainly German debt. It's preposterous. It's preposterous. Peter keeps pushing at it, and he's 100% right. Right now, the Bund, by any practical measure, the Bund should be about 4%.
Yeah, right? Which would be in line with nominal GDP there.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe 4.5%. We're not even, it is so preposterous, and let alone all the others. But the Germans, and I think that, you know, nobody acknowledges that. They all look for reasons. The narrative becomes, well, Germany exists, they're suffering under because of the immigration. Germany is a land of savers. Every bit as much as China, the Chinese say, that's why the current account surplus is so huge. It's the largest in the world because Germany saves. They save a lot of money. And those savers are being punished because the people who are long, it's not Germans, German investors who are saving that, who are investing in the DAX and everything. It's German pension funds and insurance companies, but it's not individual Germans. They got beat up so bad in the Neuer market, you know, back in 1999 and 2000. They're not that invested here. So most of their money is in fixed income type of instruments. They're getting killed. We're speaking on the Financial Repression Authority. Nobody is being as much as financially repressed as the German population. And that has political ramifications.
Will interest rates tend to rise this year necessarily at different points in the yield curve for yield curves across the major economies? Peter?
I believe that's where we're headed. We'll take it each region. In the U.S., keep talking about rising commodity prices, rising wage pressures that are clearly evident everywhere. We'll see whether productivity can offset that or not. The Fed is obviously going to be going to be buying less. You have an enormous amount of supply coming our way as debts and deficits continue to rise. We could have a $1 trillion budget deficit next year. Now, I know the relationship between deficits and interest rates are somewhat squishy, but that was the case in a bull market in bonds. If we're no longer a bull market in bonds, then the U.S. Treasury market may become more sensitive to U.S. debts and deficits. Then you throw in the weaker dollar, which can impact foreign purchasing of U.S. assets. So I think interest rates here will continue higher. I think they'll surprise to the upside. In Europe, I think interest rates there have only one way to go, and that's higher, as the ECB will likely end QE in September, as they're currently buying less, 50% of what they were buying in December. And Japan is obviously the wild card. Before I get to Japan, get back to Europe, because this is what European bondholders have to look forward to. Not only do we have the situation where QE is shrinking and going away, but after that, they have the end of negative interest rates to look forward afterwards. So you had the Riksbank today saying that, well, they're going to start the path out of negative interest rates even before the ECB starts doing it. So we are now looking at the barrel of the end of negative interest rates over the next 2 years. And with still, I think, 7-8 trillion of negative yielding interest rates, there is going to be a lot of money lost in just getting negative interest rates back to zero. So I see only higher interest rates under many different scenarios out over the next couple of years, globally.
I agree wholeheartedly with Peter. Richard, I think the 10-year yield, and I don't know, Peter and I have not discussed targets, and I hate choosing targets, but when I got pinned down and I said the 10-year would be at 3.4 at the end of December of this year, I think I'm going to be low. And I think the curve will be back between 130 and 150. I really believe that. And if they keep talking the dollar down, it's going to come about harder and faster, as Peter talked about, that slippery slope. So I'm 100% in agreement. And at 263 level and the 10-year, it's a nice technical level. But we can go a lot farther, and especially as the other central banks step back and are not there buying as much.
Now, one of the economists at Davos, we mentioned Davos earlier, is Bill White, the former chief economist for the BIS, Bank for International Settlements. He's now the head of OECD Review Board. Just wondering on your thoughts, he mentioned because of this rising trend in interest rates, there could be some problems on the horizon due to the servicing of debt, the challenge in servicing debt. So there could be a sort of central bank debt trap, if you will. Your thoughts on that, Peter?
Well, over the last few years, the average duration of credit around the world has gotten to record highs, which means that we're hugely sensitive to small changes in interest rates. And yeah, so I would have to agree with that. I read some chart from, I think it was Deutsche Bank, saying that considering the amount of global debt, that for every 100 basis points of rise in interest expense, or I should say in interest rates, can lead to a loss of $1.2 trillion on paper. So we've been addicted and accustomed to extraordinarily low interest rates that has dictated behavior, whether it's the behavior of lending money to a junk credit with almost no covenants, to keeping zombie companies alive, to buying expensive paintings and $100 million apartments in New York City, and we're buying the S&P 500 at historically at historic valuations compared to 1929 and 2000. Changes in interest rates higher, and it doesn't have to be a lot higher, could have dramatic effects on the pricing of a lot of different things, because the cost of money is the most important price and input to a lot of these things. And I think the markets are way too nonchalant with this move in interest rates and this change in behavior with respect to central banks.
And Ira?
Well, I mean, you can't say it better than that. And Bill White, who I have great respect for, you know, as I call him Mr. Lean or Clean, because in 2006, he wrote that wonderful paper for BIS talking about what the role of central banks and should they be in the business of leaning into speculative bubbles, or should they just wait and let them pop and just clean. And he, you know, because he was warning what was coming. And Peter, we are addicted to this. And there's a lot of companies, you know, we may as well invoke Heim and Minsky here. You know, in these complacent times, they're so addicted to just taking on more debt, more debt, more debt. And what are they using the debt for? To buy back stocks and pay dividends. This is so classic that, you know what, Ray Dalio, who I certainly respect as a thinker, I've been reading him, following him for over 35 years, and, you know, Jeremy Grantham also. But it seems to me that they're doing a lot of what I call chirping on issues that they ought not to be so being out there discussing, saying, well, you know, if you're holding cash, you're going to be sorry. Okay, maybe. But as I think, Richard, last time I was on with you, I did something a couple of weeks ago I haven't done in 9 years. I took the free cash, which is a lot in my trading account, and bought T-bills as my security. I mean, I've been leaving it in cash because it earned nothing. What was the difference? All of a sudden I said, wait a minute, my daughter called me and said, you know, Dad, 90-day T-bills are 138 basis points. I said, yeah, what am I thinking about? I'm moving, and I'm not the only one, because Warren Buffett said he's got $100 billion in T-bills. So these are more than interesting moments here. I'm not as convinced as you know, of this great melt-up as everybody else. I think, Peter, we're getting to where, as usual, the things start getting called. And as things get getting called, then you're going to be sorry that you own $150 million painting. We'll see.
So could there be a slowdown in asset inflation due to the sort of a quantitative tightening trend?
Well, it should, but it certainly hasn't happened yet. The question, the $64,000 question, is when does it matter? And none of us know, but I think we're more confident in that it definitely will matter. And I just think people just have to understand that risks are dramatically rising when you have such extreme valuations at the same time you have rising interest rates and a tightening of monetary policy. But again, the question is when does it matter? And we won't know until it does.
Yeah, and that's right. And people say, if they listen to Peter and I talk, they say, well, you guys are just crying because you missed it. Let me, for the record, say I have more money in stocks than I ever had. And I am today, before when the market was at its highs, I just by good fortune started peeling back more today. So I'm peeling back into this because I'm going, okay, if I miss the last 5%, I'm not going to be upset. Because you know what? Because when the break comes, it's not going to be a 5% break. It's not. It may be a 15, maybe a 20% break. And everybody says, well, that puts you in a bear market. I don't know that these rules that people have written really hold in the realm of, I'll use Bernanke's terminology, the zero bound interest rate, the lower bound. I don't know that any of these old rules hold, but we're going to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
We will find out.
Yeah. And I mean, if this were to happen, if there were a significant and fast fall in asset values of asset pricing, could there be a reverse in course by central banks from the tightening to back to quantitative easing?
Well, here's where it gets really difficult for the Fed is that the Fed, because they went so extreme and were so slow in removing that accommodation, they've left themselves with very little wiggle room. So in the past recessions, they obviously had a lot of bullets to respond. So if this sell-off is precipitated by higher interest rates, a weaker dollar and higher inflation, and then the Fed decided to start cutting rates, well, that would be a further mess for the US dollar and potentially even more inflationary and could lead to even higher long-term interest rates. So then what's the Fed going to do? I mean, they're potentially really screwed. And then that also ties their hands with QE, that can weaken the dollar even more. So that gets back to the original discussion on the dollar and the administration wanting a weaker one. It really creates a difficult situation for the Fed if the dollar weakness then continues, because it completely ties their hands in responding to the next downturn here. Because imagine them cutting interest rates with an already weaker dollar. That would be a real mess.
You know what? And that's Peter's. Because if you look, the last time the curve steepened out over, 180 or 200 base points, I'm talking about the 210, that was when I think the second QE2, and everybody was, you know, convinced, well, now we're really going to get inflation. So the Fed, of course, wasn't moving on the long end. And even though they were buying more, you know, people were selling, thinking that inflation was really going to take hold. This has been my, you know, when people say, you know, because the as people are smug about, you know, the stock market breaking or possibly, you know, being negative, the other side of the coin has been people say, well, where's the inflation? You know, guys, you know, all over the media, if you're so right, where's the inflation? Mm-hmm. And I said, because especially when they talk about gold, but gold's not going to go up because of inflation. Gold is going to go up because the central banks of the world capitulate to a deflationary fear, because that's when gold went up the first time. There was no inflation.
Yes.
There was a word about that it was a capitulation and that they would do anything, and I mean anything,
right,
to prevent deflation setting in. And that's what Peter's talking about, because if they have to backtrack here now, look out.
And could that prompt them to go into extreme negative nominal interest rates? So we get real, you know, sort of nominal interest rates going into negative territory to an extreme level, like as if they're cutting the interest rates on the low end to the same extent they did in the first financial crisis.
Well, that view will certainly have a quote unquote good friend on the Fed.
Yes, no pun intended.
Okay.
Yes, a pun totally intended. Thank you, Peter.
I mean, I'm not convinced we go to negative interest rates. I think you'd blow up the U.S. money market industry. I think the banks would go bananas. So I don't see that as being a possibility. And I actually think that the experiment with Japan and Europe, with what they did to the profitability of the banks there, I think there's a part of negative interest rates that's been repudiated as a good policy. And as the reserve currency of the world, you go to negative interest rates. I mean, what a disaster that potentially could be.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that point that you make is so well taken. And look, I've owned Japanese stocks as a safe hiding place for many years. I still hold them. They're finally starting to move now. And they're terrible. It's like the European banks. You know, every time I hear people talk about European banks, they're still Deutsche Bank, trading 1950? Yeah, big deal. They haven't really responded. Well, yeah, they're well off their lows, but that was because there was a question of their solvency. Now we've got beyond solvency, at least for the minute, until one of the European countries who are really have a lot of have too much sovereign debt, and that becomes an issue. And are we going to be our sovereign bonds going to be zero risk weighted forever? But we'll get to that question later.
And what are your thoughts on geopolitical risks to the financial markets and the economy that you see, Peter?
I'm less worried about geopolitical risks. So usually it's more newsworthy than economic or market worthy. I don't think that we're going to war with North Korea. So I put that sort of the back burner. It may matter a day here, a day there, but I'm less worried about markets via geopolitics than I am of central banks really screwing this whole thing up.
And Ira?
I couldn't agree more. You know what? You know, Richard, I have not backed. I never, to me, North Korea, I had a tripwire of my own for North Korea that my son, who really knows Japan well, he said, look it, as long as the United States isn't sending air transports to take people out of Seoul, you don't have to worry about anything. Because there's 150,000 Americans living and working in Seoul. We know what happens if the United States were to bomb North Korea. And I'm just talking about, bunker busters, that the retaliation upon Seoul would be so great that there's nothing going on there. You know, to me, the most dangerous place right now politically is Europe, because we have those Italian elections coming up, and there's a lot more to possible impact coming from there. Then that's the one, but of course, you know, they can't show that on television. You can't take a picture of what's going on politically in Europe. You can talk about it, but it doesn't have that dramatic effect. But I'm with you. There's really nothing now, at least, the only thing, of course, is the Saudi-Russia connection and possibly Turkey, but that's with us at all times. And, the Mideast is the Mideast, unfortunately, and there will always be political uncertainty, but I don't see much else.
Mm-hmm. And what about your thoughts, Peter? You recently mentioned that Europe could be the epicenter of the next financial crisis coming out of the European bond market. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, we have to remember that the bubble this time around was in central banks and interest rates, and just by having a conversation about negative interest rates tells you the bubble we're in, because we know that's the epitome of a hot potato market. So with Europe flooded with negative interest rates and the ECB reversing themselves, that's where I think there's major risk. And I think people have to really focus on that. Plenty of risks that can emanate from the US, but a blow up of the European bond market will have global interest rate reverberations.
And Ira, your thoughts on that?
That says it all. There's nothing I could possibly add to that. That covers
okay.
It.
And so given this view and on the horizon, how can investors protect themselves, or what asset classes generically do you see as making sense in this environment? Peter?
I mean, I remain still pretty positive on commodities, not just initially because of the weaker dollar, but we've seen years of underinvestment. gold and silver, obviously, is the way that I'm playing the weaker dollar directly. I think that that will continue to be a good place to be, and I expect much higher prices. I think short-term bonds now all of a sudden pay you something. You know, as Ira said earlier, owning T-bills, you actually get paid a coupon that is at or above the dividend yield on the S&P 500. So those are two places that is a way to protect yourself, so to speak, in this kind of environment.
And Ira?
Yeah, right. And here we are, really three sophisticated money people, and we're going to park in T-bill, and that's what I'm doing, so it's not a criticism, and yet we know that real yields are still negative on the short end. But it's far better than where we've been, and I'm in a holding. You know what? I'm moving more to cash every day. Whatever anybody else says, this is to me one of the greatest gifts that we've seen. Now, can it be more rational? Sure it can. Sure it can. We know that. But it was like today, when the S&Ps actually came under pressure today, the break was severe and it actually held at a huge technical level. But we still have 20 minutes left, and while the S&Ps are hovering at unchanged on the day, I'm watching. It wouldn't surprise me to see some pressure, because especially the news, Mnuchin and Wilbur Ross, there, as Peter rightly said, you're on a slippery slope, and they are playing in a very dangerous arena here. And and this isn't good for equities. You know what? The equity markets are much higher already. And as Peter talked about the double-edged sword of a weaker dollar and its impact on corporate profits, possibly, it's not as clear and easy as some people think it is, because there is going to be pushback. And all you're going to do is wind up with more uncertainty and disruption. And these are serious disruptions. When you start playing and try and manipulate financial instruments like currencies, you open up the door to a lot of unintended consequences. And we saw it this morning. The first reaction was for the Dow Jones to go up because of the, you know, of course, the large multinational corporation. But then there were second thoughts about it, because that's the way the algos have been reading this for so long. So when they see certain, weaker dollar, good for U.S. profits, boom. And, of course, the European markets never could get up off their behind. But I would still say, you know, in fact, I'm buying DAX this afternoon because they have the DAX under severe pressure. But where else are you going to go in Germany? What am I going to buy? Whether the euro goes higher or not, really, to me, unless it goes another 10 or 15% higher, would I even start to even get really concerned about it for European corporations, especially because the yen stays weak. We're not going. Nothing's going on here. But they're good. But they are playing with not even dynamite. It's behind. It's their nitroglycerin that is far more volatile. And I'm getting very cautious here.
Great words of wisdom. Thank you very much, Ira and Peter. And how can our listeners learn more about your work? Peter?
You can go to, as you mentioned earlier, bookreport.com, bookreport.com. And if you want to learn more about Bleakley, go to www.bleakley.com.
Great. And Ira?
I'm always, you know, I write, I blog, where you can get thinking. And you know what? And I think, you know, the good thing is that people can really do get some trade ideas that you can really act upon, rather than just give, you know, Peter and I are not offering theoretical analysis. I think that there's really bona fide things here that to act upon.
Great. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll end it right there, and we'll do another time as well, another session.
Thanks, guys. Well, we'll talk in a few days.
Yeah.
Yeah, see you Friday. Thank you.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.